welcome to today's program titled Employment Law Updates for Oregon Vineyards and Wineries. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. For those of you who are logged into the web presentation, you are encouraged to submit questions throughout the conference by selecting the chat pod located in the lower left corner of your screen. Then type and send your question that way. At the end of today's event, a link to an online evaluation will be displayed on your screen. Please take a few minutes to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. I would now like to introduce our host for today's call, Christy Totten. Christy, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today for a quick nuts and bolts update on some recent and relevant employment laws. The OWA felt that this was an ideal time to provide some important reminders and tips as you head into your busy season. So the goal today is just to equip you with some clear information so you can focus on your business and have confidence that you're up to date. I will be taking some questions today. You can send those in via the webinar platform, and I'll try to answer those, particularly if they're applicable to the group. If I don't get to your question, I will certainly follow up with you right after the presentation and happy to talk further about it. I see folks are still joining and see a lot of good familiar names, so I'll be happy to talk to you afterwards if for some reason we don't get to your question. Let's see here. So this is our agenda today. We're going to spend the first half of the time, the first 15 minutes or so, talking about something that applies to the winery side. So those are the maximum hour requirements for winery workers. That's not going to apply to the vineyard side. It's just for the winery. And then we're going to go through some rapid-fire issues, a couple of reminders about other new laws, and some top reminders for your busy season. So things I see come up a lot, particularly at harvest and crush, to have in the back of your mind, so that you can feel, again, confident going through this season without worrying what you're forgetting. Again, send your questions in. I'll take them as they come and happy to answer those. This is just a brief reminder. Sometimes we'll throw out some acronyms in these presentations like the DOL or BOLI, and I think most people know who these agencies are, but usually someone doesn't. So I thought I'd just throw this up there. We're going to discuss compliance today, compliance with several employment laws, and these are the entities and people who are really the enforcers of compliance and violations in Oregon. So on the federal side, you have the Department of Labor and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and those are the folks that are charged by the government at making sure that you're complying with overtime, with OSHA, with farm labor contractors, with those kinds of things. On the state side, you have BOLI, the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries, and they perform that same function, but for state laws. So both of those agencies, federal and state, might apply. And then at the bottom, you've got your former disgruntled employees, their attorneys, and judges, and they, I guess the judges aren't after money, but the employees and the attorneys are. So that's the other group of people who might be pointing out different violations that happen. So it's important to stay up to speed on this, and that's what we'll do today. So like I said, this first part is going to be focused on winery manufacturing, and it's a newer issue that's come up. This is the first year that everyone's dealing with it, particularly through crush, and it's important. So just for a little background context, in the 2017 legislative section, manufacturing employers, which includes wineries but also other industries, that were covered by the daily overtime laws, so those laws saying if someone works more than 10 hours a day, you're going to pay them overtime. They want a reprieve on overtime wages. There had been a question up in the courts and through BOLI saying that employers needed to calculate weekly overtime and daily overtime and pay both of those. And in 2017, recognizing how expensive and cumbersome that was, the OWA helped craft and pass in the legislature a bill that changed this back to the longtime practice that all businesses have had, that you calculate the weekly overtime you calculate the daily overtime, and you pay the higher of the two. You don't pay both. And so that is, again, the law effective in August of 2017. As part of the compromise of the labor unions who wanted to severely limit overtime hours that were allowed for manufacturing work, that bill also included some new overtime rules that apply to wineries and to many of their workers. We'll talk about that today. And that went into effect in January 1st of 2018. So the OWA submitted extensive comments during the BOLI rulemaking process to try to streamline this. We'll hit upon a few of those things today, the work that OWA did to try to streamline this law for you, but there are still several new items that you just need to be aware of and plan ahead for. And I've heard from several of you already, so I know that people are aware of and planning for this and just trying to figure out kind of how to strategically do it. So I have about 8 slides on this. I'm just going to start with this main overview. Here's the new law. First, assume that your winery workers, and we'll go into who this doesn't cover, but assume that your winery workers are going to be working no more than 55 hours in a work week. Your work week is your 7-day period that you have to find. So 55 hours, that's the baseline rule. Now, if you get voluntary consent, which should be in writing, as we'll discuss, if you get voluntary consent, then that person can work up to 60. So more than 55, but up to 60. And the other exception is if you get that same kind of voluntary consent and you can show an undue hardship because you have to process a perishable product, then you can have those folks work even more, up to 80 or 84 hours for a limited time. And again, we'll talk about that. But that's the first part of this law, is capping how many hours your winery workers can work in a work week. Okay, another part of this law that's been sort of buried, I think, and not heard as much is this mandatory rest between shifts. So these same winery workers, if they are working a shift that's at least 8 hours long, then you're now required to give them 10 hours off before they start again. And I've talked to BOLI about this, and the current understanding is that that cannot be waived, that the employee cannot, who wants to work more hours, cannot choose to come back in less than 10 hours. And then again, at the bottom is what I just talked about, that this law also makes it clear that the longstanding practice is correct. You're going to calculate the daily overtime for hours 10 to 13, you're going to calculate the weekly overtime for hours over 40, and you pay whichever one's higher, not both of those. Okay, so who does this apply to? Because I said your winery workers mostly. So it does not apply to your tasting room associates if they don't work on the manufacturing side. It doesn't apply to your vineyard workers. It applies to people who are using machinery to work with a raw good, like a grape, and turn it into wine. And it applies to people who are certainly most of your hourly employees, but there's some exceptions. So what you're going to want to do is look through your list and figure out who has to be covered and not. And you may need legal counsel to go through that for several people who are close to the line. If it's a supervisor or a manager, meaning that that's their primary duty, they spend more than 50% of their work week supervising or managing people, then they're not covered by this requirement. Now, you do have to be careful because this is an expensive mistake. So if you're close to the line, you really want to be careful whether you're treating them appropriately or not. So second, also qualifying administrative workers. So these are people who are spending more than 50% of their work week on office or non-manual work that covers your management policies or business operations. That's another group of people who are excepted from this. Guards, repair people. You can see there's a few different people, but if it's someone, a cellar master's assistant who's working in that capacity and not supervising people for more than half their day, that's the kind of person who's definitely going to be covered by this. Okay, so I wanted to dig in just a little more closely to those max hours. So again, 55 hours a work week is normal. 60 hours if you get voluntary written consent or request. Now, the OWA fought to get this clarified because it's not really clear in the law if someone requests verbally to work more than 55 hours but doesn't put it in writing, whether that's valid or not. And the language that the OWA was able to secure keeps that at least ambiguous, but I would definitely recommend that you get that in writing. So if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I know the law says I can only work 55, but I'm sure happy to work up to 60 this week, I would definitely recommend you get that in writing. There are forms that I have links to later in this presentation. If nothing else, at least having some sort of written documentation of that. Do not just go on someone's verbal okay that they're happy to work that many hours. So that's going to be for most of your year. And how many times do you have to get that consent? It's not clear in this brand new law yet. Probably one time is legally valid. But I would say if you can update that voluntary consent once a year, that would probably be a good practice. We're all on the same page that way. It's not administratively super burdensome. You might already be doing an update on a handbook or something else once a year where people say they understand the policy. So I would say if you could get someone once a year to say, yes, I agree, I'll work more than 55 and up to 60 hours if you need me, that's a good practice to have. But if you do it once, that may be sufficient. We sure haven't seen any bully investigations or anything yet, so we don't know exactly how it will play out, but that's probably going to be sufficient. Okay, so for part of the week, however, you could even have these folks work more than 60 hours. This is when you're in an undue hardship period. That means that you have perishable goods and you have to process them after harvest or else they're going to deteriorate or spoil. So in those circumstances, you can have these winery workers work up to 80 hours a week if they consent to do so. You can go up to 21 weeks of hardship. Now, in your industry of winemaking, I don't think you're going to need the full 21 weeks. So you will want to plan when you need them, but you'll probably be okay without going up to 21 weeks. It says on this slide, up to 4 of those 21 weeks, you can have people work up to 84 hours a week. The rest of it can only be up to 80. So just a little difference there. Remember, it has to be voluntary. You cannot require, as part of the job anymore, you cannot require people to work more than 55 hours. You should not be putting, and I've looked online a little bit, do not put on your job posting for an intern or for anyone else, do not say that the job requires more than 55 hours. That's illegal now. You can certainly hope that people will consent to more, and a lot of those people we know want to work those extra hours, but it cannot be a job requirement, and you cannot coerce. There's stiff penalties for coercing, so you're going to want to make sure your supervisors know not to pressure someone into agreeing, punish them in some way for not agreeing. It's not lawful in Oregon anymore. An employee who's given consent can revoke it, but they have to give you at least 7 calendar days notice before that work week. That's another thing that OWA worked on hard in this bill to make sure that there was at least a full week, if not a little bit more, of scheduling time to plan. If somebody says, I'm burnt out, I know I said I'd work 60 hours, I know I said I'd work 80 hours, but I don't want to do it anymore. They have to give you at least this notice. So if you go to BOLI or just in this presentation, you should be able to click through. There's some forms for consent. On the left is the consent of 55 hours up to 60. Then on the right is the consent for the 80-84 for the undue hardship period, as well as a form that you're going to have to submit to BOLI. So this gets a little confusing, but here's how it works. If you're having someone agree to work up to 60 hours, you don't need to tell BOLI about that. You just need to document that in writing, put it in the file, and keep that. I'd recommend you keep it at least 3 years, but you're required to keep it at least 1. Okay, but if you're going for that undue hardship, so you're coming up on crush and you know you're going to need it, You do have to give this notice to Boley as well. It's time sensitive. Make sure you get that in. That doesn't qualify or disqualify you, but Boley has to have that on file. So you're going to need to provide that notice to Boley. I mentioned that there's the rest period now. This one's not too complicated. It's just a matter of remembering when you're scheduling. So a couple examples here of what's wrong with these schedules. And this is the same slide. I've just crossed them off. So what's wrong with the schedule? An example one is that it only allowed 9 hours between ending on Tuesday at 10 p.m. and starting between the end of this shift, the beginning of this shift, is only 9 hours. And you have to give, remember, you got to give 10 hours now if they're going to work at least 8 hours. They'd have to modify that. Now, you could move this an hour later, but you're going to have to give at least 10 hours. And in the second example of what's wrong with this schedule, same problem here. There weren't sufficient hours of rest. There was actually a second problem as well, because this person was scheduled right here to work for 14 hours. And you can never have anybody work 14 hours in the winery if they're covered, right? Now, you're certain people, again, are going to be exempt from that, certain supervisors, that kind of thing. But if we'll go back to the assistant cellar master, if that person is scheduled for 14 hours, or perhaps the assistant to that person, you're going to have to make sure that their shift is no longer than 13 and that they get at least that 10-hour rest period. So, again, that's not too tricky. It's just a matter of planning ahead a little bit with your scheduling. So why do we care? Well, it's a pretty expensive mistake here. A lot of penalties from Boley come in at the $1,000 mark per violation. They've heightened this to $2,000 per violation if someone's coerced to work more than 55 hours, and up to $3,000 per violation if they're coerced to work that much during an undue hardship period. The law provides each violation and day as a separate offense, so we're going to certainly see plaintiff's attorneys arguing that if someone was required to work 20 days, then you get 20 penalties. I'm sure that will be fought about. And there's at the bottom of this, you can also see that employees can skip the Boley process, hire an attorney, and sue, and they get all kinds of penalties and overtime wages. So this is something to really pay attention to. When you fill out your form for undue hardship and send it into Boley, think about how long you need for the undue hardship period. And one piece of advice is, if it turns out you don't need people to work 80 hours for as long as you thought, you have to stop that. So here's an example. Let's say you think you're going to need that for 6 weeks, but it turns out only 5 weeks. Do you need people to work 80 hours? Just because you gave Boley notice that it's going to last for 6 weeks, don't continue to have people work extra. So it's only during the period that you actually have the undue hardship that you're going to let people work more than they're required to. And again, look at those job descriptions. Make sure that your job descriptions don't say, I think a lot of them that I've seen might say that long hours are required, but make sure that they don't say anything about having to work more than 55 hours in a work week as a job requirement. Okay, so a couple other, and again, if anyone has questions about those, I'm happy to answer them. It's a little confusing with all the numbers, 60, 55, 80, 84, but once you sort through it, it makes sense, and I think it's just more of a business planning issue. So other new laws. Hopefully we're all aware that the minimum wage increased last month. If you're not sure for some reason, maybe you have a new location and you're not sure which wage it falls into, there's a map here, handy map that Boley has that you can click on and see exactly where you are. I'm going to just stop a second because I have a couple questions. 13 hours is the maximum hours permitted for a shift, question mark? Yes, that's true. Again, some people are exempt from that. So your manager might be, your repair person might be, again, that doesn't apply to vineyards, but if I'm a cellar worker, for example, then I can't work more than 13 hours a shift. And that's always been the law. It's up to 10 hours. And then if I work 10 to 13, I get daily overtime. Can't work more than 13. And another question is, do we have to notify BOLI if the undue hardship ends early? Well, that's a great question. It doesn't say in the law either way. I think that it wouldn't hurt to do so, but I don't think you're probably required to. And in fact, let's say, again, you asked for 8 weeks and you only need six. You're going to have all your time records showing that nobody was required to work more than 55 or 60 hours after you got through your period. So I think that's sufficient. But I also don't think it would hurt to contact BOLI and ask them or let them know. Remember that BOLI is about to get flooded with undue hardship forms from the wine industry. Because unlike a lot of manufacturing industries, you're all going to hit it at the same time, exactly. And they're going to get them all. And they're going to see how many weeks people are asking for. And it's possible if yours is, you know, 3 weeks longer than anyone else's, that they're going to wonder what's going on over there. So think about what you really need. And then if it ends early, again, I see no requirement that you have to let them know, but I don't think that it's a bad idea necessarily. Okay, so minimum wage, again, hopefully that's all your payroll company or your bookkeeper has that all up to speed. Pay equity is a law. It's not brand new, but we're hearing more about it. It's often in the news, of course, because of the gender gap, but Oregon's law, just remember, is based on any protected class, age, marital status, religion, any protected class. As of 2017, you are not allowed to ask an applicant or an employee how much they made at their last job until after you offer them a job and tell them how much they're making. So this is intended to make sure that, you know, if, for example, women only make 85% as much as men, that doesn't become entrenched and carry over to their next job. It's intended to be a fresh slate. We haven't really seen any action because BOLI is not enforcing this until 2019, but it is currently the law that's illegal to ask before you make that offer and tell them how much they're making. Also going into effect early next year are several other equal pay rules. Again, you can't base compensation or screen job applicants based on their past or current compensation. Can't ask for pay history. And then the other piece of that is making sure that people are paid equal pay for equal work. So you're not supposed to have two people doing the same job and getting different pay. And if you do, someone might say, well, the reason I'm paid less is because I'm a woman or because I'm young or because I'm whatever protected class they hook that to. That said, the law does recognize that there's real valid what are called bona fide reasons that two people in the same job might be paid differently. And those might include the location where you work, the degree you have, the training you have, the experience you have, piece rate work, all kinds of different things. And so it's a good time to just articulate, look at what people are paid. If you see disparages, which may have been in place for a long time, figure out if you can articulate why those two people who have the same job are being paid differently. And there's a defense in that law that if you do an equal pay analysis, you can have a defense to some parts of a lawsuit. I would recommend you get an attorney involved so that you don't kind of create evidence of possible disparities in pay. But this is a good time to look at that. A lot of our clients are looking at this now as that law is sort of going into effect next year. You may have heard about predictive scheduling. Remember, this only applies if you have 500 or more employees globally. So for the vast, vast majority of Oregon's wine industry, this law will not be applicable. If so, feel free to give me a call, but for the vast majority of you, this won't. And then your sick leave policies, we continue to help folks with sick leave policies. The latest amendment was made last year, and if you offer a paid time off policy and people are getting more than 40 hours a year, then It's a good time to look at that policy because there was a change about how you treat that time. And so I'm happy to talk about that more if anyone has that kind of policy. But just a reminder to look at that. So here's just maybe my top seven, like a top 10 list, but a top seven list of things that I see come up a lot and just to have in mind while you're entering your busy season. Number one, I know y'all hear this every year, volunteers, unpaid people, not a good idea in for-profit work. So the law assumes that someone is paid for work, and we would say to never open your doors or advertise to the general public during harvest or during crush to come in and work. So I think that's really circulated through the industry the past 2 years, but that's a very fall reminder to the wine industry for sure. Number two is something I'm seeing coming up a lot, and I'm seeing a lot of mistakes still. Farm labor contractors. That's what FLC is. When you hire a farm labor contractor on your vineyard side, you are legally required in Oregon to take their license, look at it, confirm that the person providing you workers is pictured on that license, photocopy the license, and keep a record in your file. If you don't do that, you can be exposed to both penalties and you can be exposed to mistakes they make, you're liable for too. So it's an easy fix. If you haven't done this, you're not alone. I think I see the majority of people are forgetting to do this, but if you haven't done this, you can go out and ask your farm labor contractor for your license and get it in your file now, right? It's better to do late than never. Three and four are related, but remember, your vineyard workers are exempt from overtime in many cases, meaning you don't have to pay them overtime, but there's a few ways they can lose that. One is if you bring them into the winery during crush because you're busy, then they get overtime for the whole work week. And another way is if you are handling your neighbor's grapes, if they're handling those, all of a sudden they're qualify for overtime. So just watch that. It doesn't mean you can't do those two things. It just means that you'll have to be paying them overtime then. Also a good time to think about the hours for your close call folks in the winery. So your winemaker is almost certainly salaried exempt, meaning you could pay that person a set salary, and they're not going to be getting overtime. And someone like your winemaker is a really good safe bet. Someone like your tasting room associate is almost certainly not exempt. We see the gray area close calls in the middle, right? We see the cellar master. We see the assistant. We see people who are classified as salary exempt. And maybe the Department of Labor agrees, and maybe the Department of Labor does not agree. And so for those people, planning ahead a little bit about hours, thinking about it, we're always happy to help you through that, but just don't want to expose you unnecessarily. Tip number six, we talked about for a while today, it's that new max hours and rest period. I think the last bullet point might be the most important. Train your supervisors not to pressure people, because we've always had people working crazy hours in the upcoming month or so here, right? And if somebody suddenly says, I don't want to work more than 55 hours a week, I think that the natural inclination is going to be, well, you know, come on, we're all part of the team. You have to. That's how we do it. And you really don't want to have your supervisors pressuring people. So there's strategic ways to think about potentially encouraging, but you really can't coerce folks. So you're going to have to be really careful about that. And my last top reminder is a plea from a consumer to make great wine. I'm sure we're going to have a great season. And I hope that this gave everyone some useful tips and some kind of nuts and bolts things. Again, please feel free to contact me if you have any questions afterwards. My contact info is here. Jana's is as well, and she's always helpful. Happy to help if you have questions that you think could be brought up to the industry level that are affecting folks on a wide scale. We're both happy to talk anytime. So with that, thanks for your time. I sure appreciate it. And good luck to everybody as you get through the fall here. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Christy. A link to the online evaluation is now displayed on your screen. Please take a few minutes to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. This concludes today's webinar. Thank you for attending. Have a great day.